Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. Restorative justice has gotten a lot of attention on the international stage, with bodies like South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission playing a large role in trying to foster a sense of national unity after a tumultuous period. But restorative practices are gaining traction at much more local levels right here in the Milwaukee community, in places you might not imagine, like Milwaukee Public Schools. The issue of seeking greater community harmony after a period of conflict or harm is at the center of the upcoming annual conference of the UW-Milwaukee Center for Urban Initiatives and Research. The center has studied the effectiveness of restorative practices in schools. Scott Davis is a researcher at the center. Sarah Kubitz is a social worker with Milwaukee Public Schools. And Paul Dudinsky is an assistant DA in the Milwaukee District Attorney's Office who works in violence prevention with MPS. All three are involved in planning the conference, and they're in the studio with us now. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
We should start with a definition. What are the sort of restorative practices that are at the heart of this conference coming up in May? What are we really talking about? The aftermath of violence, or is violence even necessarily a part of this?
Violence is only a part of it in the sense that we're all human and violence happens in communities of humans. But the bottom line of it is about building those relationships of trust and empathy and caring, which hopefully minimizes the violence.
You know, in the criminal justice system, there are a number of forms of justice. One is a punitive, retributive form of justice. We often view that as incarcerating folks who have made really bad decisions, committed violent crimes, committed sexual assaults, crimes of those natures. We also have rehabilitative justice. Rehabilitative justice commonly seen at our children's court center. But it's also a major part of the criminal justice system. Virtually everyone who's placed on probation or faces a term of parole, their goals for that person to achieve. One might be obtaining their high school diploma, following through with counseling to address their needs, rehab, learning. Rehabilitation is all about learning. The third piece is the restorative justice. And the restorative justice, like Sarah just mentioned, is really heavy on accountability. It's about sometimes putting people eye-to-eye accountability, not just with the judge, but sometimes with someone who's been harmed, sometimes with peers in a community. Certainly in the criminal justice system, it might be with a victim or a surrogate victim. But in our schools, a lot of times it's about young people facing their peers, and that can be really difficult for them. So these different types of justice you often think about. And sometimes it's hard to define what restorative justice is without looking at some of the other types of justice, like retributive and rehabilitative justice.
Well, and frankly, sometimes it's hard to get our heads around what justice is at all. But I wonder if it's oversimplifying things to talk about restorative justice in the terms that it is the one of those three of those versions of justice that most involves either a victim or some person or group of people that has been on the receiving end of a negative action.
Yeah, oftentimes we might think of crime in the criminal justice system as involving a violation of the law, a violation of the state, violation in a school setting of rules. In restorative justice, crime or an offense is really seen as a violation of people, a violation of relationships. And those relationships now, they need to be restored. Or at very least, the person who's harmed someone else has an obligation to repair. Has quite frankly a responsibility to repair. It doesn't necessarily help people when they don't get that opportunity and follow through with that obligation.
Well, and what are some real world examples of this in a school setting? I mean, it's fairly easy to wrap our heads around the idea of restorative practices in when we're talking about, you know, a burglary or a sexual assault or a violent crime of some kind. But what are we talking about when this is applied within the context of a school system?
Maybe, Sarah, you might want to give an example. I do want to tell you one thing, Mitch. We're really, really careful. You mentioned, say, a sexual assault. That might not be at all a case that we would take up with a restorative justice angle because of the power and control dynamics that are present in a domestic violence or sexual abuse case. You know, even burglary cases, people who feel violated in that way, that their home has been violated. Sexual abuse, obviously going to be a violation of my body as a victim. But it can be very, very emotional for some folks. This would never be something, obviously, that we'd want to foist. But interestingly enough, we have a lot of victims who will step forward and say, you know what, I want to meet this person who committed this crime. And that happens, whether the person is incarcerated or someone else who is in the community one way, shape, or form.
But so let's go back then to the school setting. How is this being applied? How are restorative practices being applied in this case?
So often in the school setting, there's he said, she said, and what ends up in an ugly mess often started as a simple he said, she said. And when – and this is getting back to the idea that restorative practices is about building that sense of community and restoring that sense of connection that we have by virtue of being human beings, which gets messed up all the time. The focus is on how do we help students know each other as people so that they won't want to harm each other in the first place, so that if they do have a question about who did what or who said what to them, they have a way to address that. And so a lot of the cases that we take do come from those sorts of situations.
Yeah, and from my standpoint, it's interesting because as a prosecutor, usually I'm used to being in a reactive place. The crime has already occurred. Perhaps the investigation, the arrest has been completed. And at that point in time, one of those cases flows to my office and we make a charging decision and then a person is in court. And here in the restorative justice, you get an opportunity up front to work with people. And in the schools, just last week, we had a young person that came to one of the circles at Rufus King High School. Very impressive. Not only the student who came to that circle had a lot of courage to face his peers, but the peers in the circle, the tremendous amount of leadership that I saw from them. They gave him excellent advice. They gave him some difficult advice. In many ways, some of that advice to him was uncomfortable. He probably would have been easier for him to actually take the suspension that afternoon rather than facing his peers. They gave him some, you know, they gave him some difficult judgments, but they were judgments that he had to hear. And you know what? He didn't hear them that day from the adults. He heard them from his peers, which to me showed the influence that these young people can have on their own school community. And afterwards, I tell you, Mitch, these kids are excited. They are juiced up because they feel like they're making a difference. They're making a change. And in a way, they feel like they own their community.
Scott Davis, I wanted to turn to you because this conference is being organized, convened by the Center for Urban Initiatives and Research in partnership with some other groups. Why is this part of your charge?
Well, for the last, say, 15 years or so, we've had a urban initiatives conference for the community. And really, it's about applied practices and principles that various groups can use and take away with them. Through my work with Milwaukee Public Schools and the Safe Schools, Healthy Students Initiative, I was actually introduced to restorative justice and restorative practices. And one of the things that as I was evaluating, you know, what is the impact, what is working, what processes seem to be working, this one seemed to – it was very interesting to me. It seemed to be doing something. And what it was, I wasn't quite sure. So we did some pretty intensive research on a comparison of restorative practices schools versus schools that are not doing it across a variety of different areas. And this is kind of a long way to get back at to the question you had asked about what type of offenses. We tracked and we continue to track when restorative practice circles are happening, including how many students are served and the reasons. And in 2009, 2010, and 11, 10 to 11, there were classroom disruptions, bullying, fighting, disrespective language, truancy, a whole variety of issues. It's not just a violent offense or just someone who's not behaving in class. It was a variety. And it was very interesting. We used a matched subjects design where we matched a school who's receiving restorative practices with those that aren't. And we had some criteria. They had to have the restorative practices in place for at least 2 years. And the findings were very interesting and to me suggested that this could be very promising. And just some examples, we looked at disciplinary incidents and those are the behaviors of the youth in the school. And in terms of the restorative practices schools, they went down 49%. In comparison, the non-restorative schools only went down 15%. And just in terms of sheer numbers, it went from just under 2,000 for the restorative practices schools in the first year to just under 1,000. So it went down by 1,000. In terms of personal and physical safety, another really interesting finding there, restorative practices schools decreased their number of personal safety incidents by 11%, whereas it increased in the non-restorative schools by 4%. So one of the things we wanted to do that was really interesting in and of itself, we wanted to look a little bit more specifically at a couple of different instances. They were in parallel with not only restorative practices but some of the initiatives that MPS was actually as a district working on. One of them is classroom disruptions, which has somewhat of a generic definition. But really right there, a 41% decrease in the restorative practices schools compared to only 11% decrease in the non-restorative schools. And in fighting, it went down 26% for restorative practices schools and up 9% in the non. So something was happening in those schools. The classrooms were less disruptive. The fighting incidents were going down. And in general, the restorative practices schools started at higher points and were at the end were below the non. Bottom line is these are very promising. A lot of these are not statistically significant. However, I think we need to not lose sight that these are very practically significant because these are trends that I think MPS and our students and our teachers and our people in the community really need to see that these practices can be implemented in a school setting and a variety of other settings to really make this happen.
Maybe not statistically significant enough to draw conclusions, but statistically significant enough to warrant further study.
Exactly. And it was based on these findings that we were planning our 2013 conference, and we felt that this is such an important activity that can happen in our community in light of a lot of different things. You had mentioned violence earlier on, and Milwaukee, we have a history of violence here, and we've had some pretty atrocious incidents lately. And we just felt that this was a really good area to not always work about dealing with the tragedy afterward. Maybe is there something that we can do on the front end to prevent it? And so what we did is we put together our restorative practices conference, and it's going to happen on May 29th here in Milwaukee at the Italian Community Center. And we're all coming together with sort of two foci in mind. One would be repairing harm on the individual level, which I think is how a lot of people stereotypically think of restorative practices. But then we want to move into repairing harm on a community level. And what we feel is a good place to talk is Arno Michaelis and Pardeep Kalika from Serve to Unite. They are going to talk about the Sikh temple shootings that happened about a year ago. And I think it's an interesting companion people. Arno was a former white supremacist skinhead who has turned around and now he's about peace and building the community. And Pardeep, with his father and his family and relatives and friends with the temple the shooting that they had to survive, instead of turning bitter, he's turned it around to how we can fix it. So we feel that this is a really good opportunity for the community to learn about this instead of just the restorative justice from the law angle.
So let me ask all of you this. Who are you hoping will be there and what do you hope that they do with what they learned that day?
We're going to have a variety of people, I think. What's really neat about what UWM, the Center for Urban Initiatives and Research, has done is they've really looked at restorative justice and said, who are the professionals? Who are the different professionals that are utilizing it? And so you've highlighted a breadth and a scope of people. So I think this is going to be attractive whether you're utilizing restorative practices as a judge or whether you're utilizing it as a prosecutor, a probation or parole agent, if you're utilizing it as a school teacher or a school social worker or a school psychologist or as a principal, I think you're going to get people also from the community. You mentioned Arno and Pardeep. You're going to get people from the community that have been working and using this type of powerful circle work. I think they're going to those people are going to really be a part of this. I see this as a conference, but I really see it as a summit of bringing together people to really share these ideas. And I think this is a great leadership, not only by UWM, but for Milwaukee, for this community.
Just in terms of who's come to the table, we at UWM are partnering with the Medical College of Wisconsin, their Violence Prevention Initiative. And that's, I think, in and of itself is a great for at least for me at the center is a new direction where we're reaching out to the wider academic community. We have individuals that are coming who are faculty at various universities. We have people who are coming from Milwaukee Public Schools that might be teachers, that might be paraprofessionals, that might be social workers, that might be administrators. We have people who are coming from law enforcement. It could be some people from the judicial system. Paul Dudinsky from the DA's office, they've been a part of planning this process the entire time before and after. And to get it, I think Paul answered it really well. Anyone who might have an interest or might be using this, I think, will find this very valuable.
And it's great. District 3 Milwaukee Police Department officers are meeting with youth, talking about issues and sharing back and forth. And I personally feel like you can tell that the level of respect has gone up. The level of trust has gone up between folks. Sarah mentioned earlier that word connectedness. You can feel that. Here's a group of young people that came into this circle with some pretty strong opinions about law enforcement. And the Milwaukee Police Department officers who came in here, they came in here very open and very willing to listen and to have an exchange, to describe, to explain, but really to listen. And I felt that was the strongest piece. I was very impressed with those officers who came in there and were open to listen to those youth. As you mentioned, law enforcement, I think they would be just a terrific group to attend the conference as well.
Well, whether you call it a conference or a summit, it sounds like pretty remarkable work. And Scott and Paul and Sarah, best of luck with it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Paul Dudinsky is an assistant DA in the Milwaukee District Attorney's Office. Sarah Kubitz is a social worker at Milwaukee Public Schools. And Scott Davis is a researcher at UW-Milwaukee's Center for Urban Initiatives and Research. The center's conference on restorative practices is scheduled for May 29th. You'll find a link to more information at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. One last break, and then writer Jess Walter talks about the flawed but redeeming characters that populate his latest novel and most of his fiction. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.